All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560, final hour of the week. Myself, Andy Pate, Charlie Grimes, George Barna joining us now on the program. George, welcome to Rush to Reason. How are you today, sir?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
For those that maybe don't know who you are, I mean, I followed your work and the research you guys have done for years and years now. Andy's the same. But
so
for those that maybe haven't and don't know much about what you guys do, can you explain real quick what you guys do at the Institute and how you come up with some of the findings that you find?
Yeah, at the Cultural Research Center, there are two things that we focus on. One is worldview, and the other is cultural transformation. So we do nationwide surveys trying to figure out what people believe, what they do, and how that relates to where the country is going.
Okay, so what is this last report that you guys have found when it comes to millennials and some of the, you guys say even seismic generational worldview shift away from, their core faith?
Yeah, what we find is that based on this American worldview inventory that we do every year, as we look at things generationally, we know that things have been changing from generation to generation. But
sure.
Now that we're looking at the worldview and breaking that down into component parts, what we're finding is that millennials in particular, while 57% of them consider themselves to be Christian, only 4% of them have a biblical worldview. And if you look at the second half of that generation, it drops to 2%. So as we look at the specific elements of that, we find that there are dramatic changes in terms of what they believe about God, about the Bible, about sin, about their purpose in life, about how to define success, and so on and so forth. They really do not reflect very many traditional Christian perspectives. And as they look at their future and what they want the country to become on their watch, they're hoping to develop a very different kind of culture, one that essentially is not ruled or even significantly influenced by God, by the Bible, or by churches.
Hey, George, by the way, first of all, I totally agree with you. Could not agree more. 4%, if anything, seems high to me. And could you explain what you mean by a biblical worldview? I mean, we obviously know what that means, but what is the biblical worldview that they are abandoning? And how do you see that they don't hold it?
Well, everybody has a worldview, Andy, the idea of a worldview is that it's the mental, emotional, and spiritual filter that each one of us has that enables us to make every decision we make. A worldview helps us to make sense of the world, figure out how we want to respond to that world, helps us to determine who we want to be in that world. And it starts developing when we're between 15 to 18 months of age and is almost fully developed by the age of 13. During our teens and 20s, we tend to modify it somewhat. We figure out how to articulate it and implement it. We may shift it a little bit, but it's still essentially what it was by the age of 13. We actually did a longitudinal study a few years back and found that most people die still believing the core beliefs that they bought into by the age of 13. So when we say that somebody has a biblical worldview, what that means is that they're trying to make decisions based on biblical principles. And so that requires believing that the Bible is true, that it's reliable, that it's applicable and relevant to our lives today. And what we're finding with millennials having such a very small proportion of them with a biblical worldview, that's based on nationwide studies that we do. We do a big study at the beginning of every year. A couple thousand people randomly selected to be representative of the general population. We ask 51 different questions about beliefs and behavior that get us to understand what worldview they have. If it's not a biblical worldview, what worldview do they have? And so that's what our research tells us.
Solid.
Yeah, and George, yeah. Why do you think that people generally retain the beliefs that they form at such a young age? Is it for the comfort, trying to retain the comfort they felt as children and carry that forward? Because obviously going forward, they're going to hear a lot of different points of view.
They do, but remember that we are bombarded by information day after day after day. And so once we've sifted through the information and we've made a choice – we tend to move on to, okay, what's the next big decision I have to make? What's the next one after that? And we're trying to put it all together so that we can get through each day. It's not easy being a human being in this day and age. And so once we come to a set of conclusions about how things work, you know, let me put it this way, 13-year-olds do not have the same worldview that they had as 3-year-olds. That worldview does evolve. It does develop over time. But by the time you begin your teenage years, you've been through a lot. You've experienced a lot. You've thought through a lot. And so at that point in time, you've pretty much figured out most of the things that you're going to have to figure out.
Okay, George, in that case, are we basically looking at the effectiveness of targeting with our society? And what I mean is this. The left, the socialist, Marxist, atheist mentality, which, by the way, I was raised in until now, they saw it fit to target young people with the public education system so that they could ingrain in them a whole different set of beliefs at an early age, believing they wouldn't depart from it.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, you look at a lot of world leaders, Lenin, Mao Zedong, a number of others who have publicly said, and the age changes slightly, but typically they say something like, if you give me a child till the age of 7, I'll have them for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much what happens in schools. It happens through the media. It's this indoctrination process. Advertisers target young people because that same principle mm-hmm. holds true.
Right.
They know that, look, if I can get them when they're young, I'm going to have them for the rest of my life.
That's why drug dealers hang out around schools.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's why the government wants the public schools to be professing a mm-hmm. particular doctrine to those children.
Right.
If the children buy into it, they don't have to worry about it when they're older. And by the way, I'll say spiritually, the one who first discovered all this was Satan. Satan realizes, look, if I win over the children,
right.
the war is over.
Right.
I don't have to worry about fighting them as adults.
So saying that, where do you, and I know you're the researcher, you're not the one telling, you know, church leaders and so on how to fix these things, although I think there's enough research where you can give some good suggestions on, you know, how we gain some of this back and shift the pendulum back the other direction. I guess the question I have is, when it comes to the church and the role that they played in a lot of these kids' lives or didn't play in their lives, what could the church be doing different today to reverse this?
Well, certainly one of the things that needs to happen is that we've got to focus on children. As we've studied what churches do in ministry, several things have come about. One is that we realize that children, by and large, are used as bait. We don't treat them seriously as spiritual entities. We tend to think that the game is won or lost based on what we do with adults, not realizing that adults generally don't change. The Holy Spirit can change anybody at any time. But typically, you know, I'm a sociologist. I look at averages. So on average, people don't change much, if at all, after the age of 13. Yet churches continue to focus on adults. We use children as bait to get adults in the door.
True.
So
true.
What do we have to do with those kids? We have to make them happy when they're at church. So we play games and we sing songs and, you know, we do all these things that are geared to helping the children go back to their parents and say, yeah, I had a good time, because then parents would be willing to go back to that place if they want to. That's not the way to do it. We've got to recognize this is where the war is won or lost, in those rooms with the children. Secondly, we've got to look at what's being taught in our churches. We know that there are certain biblical principles and concepts that most churches don't touch. Why won't they touch them? Because thirdly, when we look at how churches evaluate whether or not they're successful in ministry, and we ask these questions in our surveys of senior pastors, what they told us is, yes, we evaluate. You know, now 4 out of 5 senior pastors of Protestant churches across the country say, yes, our church is successful in ministry. And we ask them, how do you know that? They said, well, because we measure it. I said, great, what do you measure? There are 5 things that most churches measure to determine whether or not they're an effective ministry. How many people show up, how much money they raise, how many programs they offer,
mm-hmm.
how many staff people they've hired,
mm-hmm.
and how much square footage they've built out.
Right.
Now, I'm a measurement guy, but you got to realize you get what you measure.
Right.
And when
that's
you
right.
measure that stuff, you're not measuring discipleship. You're not measuring life transformation. And so we're measuring the wrong stuff. We're getting the wrong stuff. We're living with the consequences.
George, you know, when I and I know it's not this way, and I doubt if it will ever go back to this, but as, you know, a child growing up, I'm the opposite of Andy. Andy grew up in an atheist home. I grew up in a Christian home. And I remember, you know, from a very young age, George, in fact, you know, probably started going to church when I was still in diapers. I don't remember a time, you know, not going. And I just know as a young boy, even all the way up in, you know, through my teenage years, you know, we had a church, and this is the way most churches worked back then. You went to Sunday school typically prior on a Sunday morning. You went to Sunday school first. Main service was second. And there wasn't a separate program during main service for kids. You know, you went to Sunday school with your age group, and then you went to church with your family. And I see today where, and I've, you know, I've been in church leadership and so on over the years, and now what we do is we separate the family the minute they hit the door, and they all go different directions, and you meet up after it's done. Do you think that's had an effect upon what we're talking about?
Yeah, and let's even step back an additional step here, because we've got, you know, we've talked about how churches are maybe not doing the best job they could be doing. They're not as focused on what they need to be as they should be. But the other thing to put on the table is parenting. Now, scripturally, it's the parents' job to raise the children to be followers of Christ. It's the church's job to equip parents to do that.
Right.
And so when we look at, you know, Deuteronomy 6 and other passages about the importance of parents doing this job, part of the difficulty that we have today is, number one, parents don't know what their worldview is. Most of them don't have a biblical worldview, and you can't give what you don't have. And they're not being equipped by their church to do a better job, to focus on their children, etc. In fact, the dominant approach to parenting in America today is to subcontract parenting to the paid professionals out in the community who can do it better. Most parents think, look, I don't know how to do this. I'm not a professional parent, so I'm going to hire the best coaches and teachers and other people who are really good in their discipline, whether it's sports or music or academics or faith, and I'm going to let those people do it. So most parents come to their church thinking, whew, I took care of this one, check it off the list.
Right.
I've got the religious professionals who are going to do the job. I don't need to worry about it. We sure do need to worry about it.
Hey, George, what about the lack of training that we see in the church in defending your faith, both scientifically and philosophically? One thing I noticed when I became a Christian is I went through a period of, I'll just say it, I came to Christ due to science and philosophy.
And your own research.
And my own research. Right. And then I became a Christian. Of course, it was a very emotional thing. But what I noticed shortly after that was that I was the only one in the church who could defend my faith to people outside the church. And I could, you know, dissect an atheist and dissect these people.
Because where you came from.
Right. Not in a bad way, but a loving way to show them, look, your beliefs on Christianity are totally wrong. I think, in my opinion, that we are leaving young people in the church incredibly ill-prepared to stand up when they are faced with all the ideology coming at them from academia, entertainment, and so forth.
Agree.
Could that lack of training be really setting us up for failure?
Well, sure. And, you know, I do a lot of election research, too, for, you know, the different election cycles. And one of the big things that we found in the last three election cycles is that conservative Christians were the people who are least likely to be engaging people who aren't conservative in conversations about the issues and the candidates.
Right.
And so we dove into that to try to figure out why. And what we discovered is that the vast majority of people who attend conservative Christian churches said that they are dying for their pastors to teach them how to think biblically about the specific issues that are raised in these campaigns.
Right.
They don't want to get in a conversation with other people because they're not quite sure how to articulate what they believe. They're not sure what they believe. It's exactly what you're talking about, where from a very young age on, we're telling them stories and doing stuff, but we're not strategically and intentionally helping them to understand their faith such that they could articulate it. And as 1 Peter 3:15 would say, always be prepared to give a reason for the hope that's within us.
And to your point, George, it's also why most Christians can't defend the fact that nowhere in Scripture does it talk about us being socialists and or having any type of a socialistic mindset. And yet you'll hear people, including some that are in the pastorate, say that, well, you know, Jesus was the ultimate socialist. Well, nothing could be farther from the truth because of what you said a moment ago. We're not teaching any of that anymore.
Well, absolutely. And, of course, socialism is based on a Marxist worldview. And if you begin to look at what Marx and Lenin and, you know, all the original socialists were teaching, you know, among the things there is that there is no God, there is no absolute moral truth, the Bible is just another book, nothing special about it, and the family is a detrimental institution to humanity. Everything that Marxism is teaching and that it stands for is opposed to what the Christian faith is all about, is opposed to what Jesus Christ died on the cross for us for.
Right.
So we can't afford to fall for that nonsense about, you know, this is really the most Christian way. It's anything but.
George, how do folks find this last research you guys did? What's the best place for them to go to look at all the things even we've talked about today?
At the Cultural Research Center at Arizona Christian University, where I work, we put out these reports every couple of weeks based on the national research we're doing. So if they go to culturalresearchcenter.com, all the reports are there for free. They can download them. They can send them to friends. They can sign up to get alerts as to when the next report is coming out.
Perfect. George, I know we've taken longer time today than what we really even told you we'd do, and I appreciate you being gracious and spending extra time with us. It's been great. I know this knowledge and what we're doing with our listeners helps them as well. So I do appreciate it. You're welcome back anytime, sir. I really mean that.
Oh, I really appreciate it. I'll look forward to it.
Thank you, George. I really appreciate it, sir. Have a great weekend.
All right.
You bet. Take care. Good stuff, Andy. And by the way, for those of you listening that maybe don't know that name like Andy and I or even Charlie does, I mean, this is the...
Oh, yes.
He's the Rasmussen of church stats.
Yes.
Right? Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've studied him for years.
I mean, when it comes to things in the church, now they're even getting out into, like you said a moment ago, just elections and how's that working and so on. He's the king.
Can I take it a step further?
Sure.
Without George Barna, the church would have absolutely no idea today, John, how it is perceived.
I agree.
And
I agree.
What is happening societally. They would know everything's going down. They get that.
But they wouldn't
would
know how.
They wouldn't know how.
That's
or
right.
How much.
That's no, you're right. Well, kudos, George. Thank you. All right. We'll take a break. We'll come right back. And when I come back, I want to talk a little bit, really kind of even dovetail into what we talked about a moment ago, because I've been texting some listeners throughout the last few days here about some of what Andy and I opened up with today, paying people to go back to work, minimum wage. What is the role there of an employer? What's the role of a Christian? I mean, we'll go down the list here when it comes to some of those things, because I think there's some real misconceptions out there as to what employers should be doing to, quote unquote, you know, raise up employees. And I'll just say it as it is. I think people have it backwards.
Yes.
Okay.
I think that's safe to say.
Talk about it when we come back. Bruce Simmons is up next. He's our reverse mortgage specialist. Anything you need from Bruce, please give him a call today, 303-467-7821.
A reverse mortgage with Bruce Simmons puts more money in your pocket. One of the common misconceptions Bruce hears about reverse mortgages is that they're too expensive. But here in the Front Range, chances are good your property value will keep going up even after you get the loan, which means your overall equity may actually increase over time instead of shrinking. Plus, you get the benefit of using a portion of your home's value now instead of waiting until you sell the house. Best of all, FHA reverse mortgages are non-recourse loans, which means they're guaranteed by the government. So no matter what happens to the housing market, as long as you keep paying taxes and insurance, you can never lose the house or pass on debt to your heirs beyond the value of the home. A reverse mortgage puts more money in your pocket. Ask Bruce Simmons now at klzradio.com/reverse. Personalized reverse mortgage expertise. NMLS number 409914. American Liberty Mortgage is an equal housing lender.
Folks, if you've got anything on your plate, legally speaking, that you need help with, don't tackle that on your own. Call Kevin. He'll walk you through whatever needs done. He'll represent you if needed. And that could be everything from, you know, hey, you're in an accident. You've had lost wages, medical bills. You're not getting the value of your injuries back. You're not even getting things fixed up as far as injuries go. Whatever it happens to be, call Kevin today, 303-806-8886. Or again, find him online at fleshlawfirm.com. And that's spelled F-L-E-S-C-H.
Avoid the pitfalls with Kevin Flesh. Picture this. You're in court before a judge and jury trying to get the at-fault party's insurance company to cover your hospital bills, and the defense attorney pulls out your medical records. Comparing what you said to the police at the scene of your injury to what your doctor transcribed, you've contradicted yourself. You start to get nervous. You don't want to look like an idiot, but you simply don't recall what you said to the police. That was a long time ago. KLC's personal injury attorney, Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law, prepares you for these kinds of questions so you never need to worry about what to say. Of course, the opposition will always try to call your credibility into question. But with Kevin Flesh, you always know exactly how to respond. Schedule a free consultation now at 303-806-8886. Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law. Trial tested. Trial ready.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Charlie added one thing there, too, that I didn't get a chance to tell George, but you know, Charlie is spot on. He put it on the screen here, Andy. And the government now also, on top of what you said in regards to education, let's now add that they want to take care of not only kindergarten but preschool as well now.
Womb to the tomb.
They're going to take these things, you know, these kids from the very beginning, 3 years old and up.
Your government will govern, using that word, how you learn about life, what you think about life, all of it, every single portion. Yep. And let me tell you something. They hate God with everything in their being.
Yeah, they hate a lot of things, that being one of them.
They hate God.
They hate God. They hate business. They hate employers. They hate self-employed. I can go down the list, Andy.
John, you talk a lot about things like the trans movement and all this. Look, all of that stuff, folks, comes from one place, hating a creator.
That's right.
Because the creator created us
as
we are.
You are.
Right. So when you are trained to see it as freedom, to see yourself not as you were made, whether through, you know, creation or evolutionary processes, right? And I don't believe in evolution, but I'm just saying, when you see it as freedom, as liberating, to see yourself as something other than you were made, what you're really doing is slapping the face of a maker.
Mm-hmm. The
yeah, modern,
what Andy, what you're really saying is, I don't like the way you made me.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Or, I don't like the idea of having to accept you as my maker, period.
Yeah. And
you're not
to
in
that,
charge. I don't want any absolutes. I define my absolutes. I'm God.
I don't believe in you. I don't like you. I don't like the way you made me, so I'm going to go do my own thing. That's what you're really saying.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Even though it's ludicrous to try to define yourself other than what you are, whatever you are.
Which there's a lot of folks out there that don't even believe in Christian principles that would agree with what we just said.
Yes.
Because it's just kind of common sense.
It's kind of silly for a short person to define themselves as tall, or vice versa. It's silly for somebody in a two-sex species, right? It is silly for someone in a two-sex species to try to say that I am not one of those. That's ludicrous.
Or I'm both
of
those.
Or I was in the wrong one.
Or I'm both of those.
Or I'm both of those.
Like Demi Lovato.
Right.
I'm both. I'm a them.
Yes. Demi Lovato can now procreate on her own. She divides like cells.
Right.
Before you know it, we're going to have all kinds of Demi Lovatos around, which, by the way, I can't think of anything more frightening. And they'll all be wearing brown shirts, just so you know.
Yeah.
Look, this is crazy.
It is crazy, Andy.
This is all hatred toward God. And I came to realize this, you know, coming up in the Democrat Party and liberalism, you know, they always think, oh, what they really hate is capitalism and oil companies and this and that. Mm. Let me tell you something,
the byproduct
folks,
of the other.
Yeah. Those are surface. What they really hate is, and this includes the ones who go to churches. Okay. I'm including liberal Christians, Council of Churches, United Methodists, so forth. Right. Which is not to say there are no good people in those. What they really hate is God. They hate having a maker.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Because a maker can say what is good, what is evil. I want to say what's good and evil.
Well, and I'll give you some examples as to why you are correct in what you're saying.
Okay.
I'm going back and forth with some folks here and some texters, which, by the way, I appreciate. I always appreciate a good conversation via text message, and this has to do with you and I talking about in the beginning of the show, our now, you know, King Polis giving out a $1,600 signing bonus, if you would, to those that are not working, if they do it between now and a certain date, and then after that date, it's $1,200. And he's pulling this out of the $500 million coronavirus, you know, relief fund, or he's taking $500 million from that fund. Let me say that correctly. So I've been having a conversation, you know, back and forth, and the initial text message goes like this.
Okay.
Maybe they don't want to go back to the low wages they were receiving, which I then responded, maybe they should raise their skill level and or provide more value to their employer so they can make a better wage. It's not about the employer, it's about the employee. So, yes, I can say this as I've been an employer now for 35 years. I also continued and said, I'm also tired of hearing the term living wage and you can't live on minimum wage. Of course you can't. So then don't live on it. Figure out a way to better yourself and stop relying on others to do so. And then this person came back and said, but not everyone can pull themselves up like that, and the employer should be considered, or the employer should consider raising their wages to keep employees of that caliber. I then responded, they can only do what the market allows, something non-business people seem to forget, and why would I reward someone who doesn't want to reward themselves? What I'm really getting at here, Andy, is they are taking away from people's, how should I say this correctly? They're taking away
responsibility.
They're taking away the human spirit for us to better ourselves and do better and achieve a goal and make something of ourselves. What they're really saying is, oh, people can't do that. We have to do that for them.
Yes.
Wrong.
That's exactly
what
they're saying.
You do that, you crush the human spirit, folks. And that's partially what we have going on right now. We're literally crushing the human spirit, making a couch potato out of it, having it sit on the couch all day long, watch TV, and collect a check.
You are making people, as I always say, needy.
Right.
Okay.
Dependent.
Yeah, and they say, no, I'm going to go to work. No. If you need others to raise your wages because you didn't do it through your own excellence, then you are needy. I don't care that they're paying you to show up. All right? I don't care. You're needy. No, I'm not out there on a street corner. Yes, you are. You're needy because you demanded that others jack up your pay beyond what you've earned. And oh, by the way, John, let me just say this. No employer has ever given a pay raise.
No, the customers do.
The customers do. Right. The customers do. And let me tell you, I guarantee you that person who is texting with you goes to Walmart and buys the cheapest product to give him the best bang for the buck that he possibly can. And just by doing that, he is lowering pay. Mm-hmm. Okay? If he sees box A next to box B, and box A gives him more, you know, gizmos for less money, mm-hmm. and they're the same quality, he's going to buy box A, even though box A was made in China by slave labor.
Right.
And guess what he just did? He lowered the pay of the people around him. Why? He's a hypocrite. That's why.
Yeah, and on top of that, too, the thing everybody forgets is just simple math. If employers have to raise the wages to do what this particular person is saying so we can have people actually back at work working again, then what Andy just said is correct. We raise also the prices that these customers then have to pay for whatever services we're producing, which then means at the end of the day, the guy that just got the pay raise at that job because he wouldn't go back to work without it now pays a higher price for all of the other goods and services that they was paying a less price for prior. So at the end of the day, Andy, it's a zero net gain for that individual.
Yes, it is.
Nada. It's a zero for that person. So then why would we do that?
We do that because it's class warfare.
Because it just makes it feel good for people?
No, you do it for politics. Look.
So dumb.
The Democrat Party, the entire recruiting apparatus of the Democrat Party is geared around one thing. I want to make you resent someone else and then declare myself your liberator from them or your conqueror of them. I can get you to get from them what they haven't given you. But I got to get you to hate them first, okay? Mm-hmm. So I got to focus on how they have more than you.
All right, we come back. Let's talk about how, and there's people listening that may take this and share it, which I hope they do. Let's come back and talk about how if you're that, let's just talk a minimum wage worker.
Okay.
How do you better yourself if you're a minimum wage worker?
All right.
Okay, let's do that, shall we?
Yep.
Maybe some folks will learn something out of this. So Golden Eagle Financial is coming up next. By the way, speaking of finances, we talked to Al earlier. If you have not heard from your financial advisor and it's only been through, like, Zoom, give Al a call today and find out what he can do for you. Find him at klzradio.com or 303-744-1128.
Before you make any decisions about specific strategies to collect your retirement funds, you need to picture yourself in retirement. Al Smith, founder of Golden Eagle Financial, meets with plenty of people who've never thought about how they will spend their retirement years. So he starts every consultation with an exercise in imagination. You probably have a plan bouncing around in your brain somewhere. Starting a business, traveling overseas, volunteering at your church, going on a mission trip, moving closer to family. Al will help you to envision, after decades of hard work, finally having enough time to do what you want. As you describe your future goals, Al will establish a realistic projection of what you'll need in retirement. Start planning early so most of your retirement income can be tax-free. Fill out the contact form at klzradio.com/money. Advisory services offered through Foundation Investment Advisors, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
Gina's Auto Service, folks. Again, get that vehicle in top working order. Memorial Day is just around the corner. Time is running out. If you need something done, you really need to get in there and get it done quickly. Call Monday and or go online and get that appointment scheduled. Gino's in Littleton. It's Gino's with a J. Ginosautoservice.com, 303-794-6700.
Now's the time to take advantage of Gino's Napa Break Special. This month, get a $50 Napa prepaid Visa card with a qualifying Napa Brakes parts purchase of $250 or more. For over 38 years, Gino's Auto Service has been serving Littleton and customers along the Front Range. At Gino's, their team recommends checking your brakes every 5,000 miles. Stop in this week and they'll check your brakes for free. As members of Colorado Select Auto Care, the Geno's team will back up their work with Napa's nationwide peace of mind warranty. To make your life simpler, Geno's offers loaner vehicles so you can drop off your car and pick it up when ready. Geno's continues their public service work, partnering with Hands of the Carpenter and donating work on vehicles for single mothers or women in need. Check out all their Google reviews for a good snapshot of their business. They're AAA approved and located at Bowles and Platte Canyon. Stop in or visit them online at ginosautoservice.com. That's Ginos with a J.
Stay up to date with Rush to Reason after the show on Twitter at Rush to Reason and on Facebook.com/Rush to Reason.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Myself, Charlie Grimes, our engineer, Andy Pate as well. Okay, Andy.
Yes.
You are a early 20s. You got out of college.
Okay.
You've got a degree, but, you know, you're not finding many places that you can actually use the degree. And by the way, I have no idea what the degree is. It doesn't make any difference. Doesn't matter. You went, you got a degree. You're now trying to figure out what you're going to go do for a job.
All right.
And by the way, the reason I'm picking on this particular type of person is because that's probably the typical one that's going to be at home collecting the check. And I'll explain why I feel that way in a bit.
Fair enough.
That's my thought process. So,
okay.
You're at home. You're collecting a check now, and maybe prior to COVID, you did work a restaurant job, you know, because you didn't find anything else to do in your career path that you wanted to go down, so you worked a restaurant job. And that restaff got closed or short-staffed, you know, you wanted short-staff or whatever, so you've been collecting unemployment since.
All right.
So you're that individual that maybe just, you know, bottom rung, you're working at the restaurant, you now have an opportunity to go back to work, the restaurant's called you to come back, and so you're trying to decide, should I go back or should I keep taking the government dole, the government cheese that I'm getting on a monthly basis?
Okay.
Okay. Now, what are some ways, if you are this individual, and you are at the bottom rung, making maybe just a little above, by the way, there's not much minimum wage jobs in Colorado anymore anyway, so most are in the $13 to $16 an hour range,
right,
for what we're talking about. So they're not a minimum wage, folks. So get that out of your head. But let's just say you're at the bottom rung.
Okay.
Doesn't matter what the pay scale is. You're at the bottom rung. How do you, as said busboy, start to improve yourself and improve your quality of life through cash?
Okay, number one thing I do is I stop assessing what I need and start assessing what my business needs. What are their needs and how?
Oh, really? So, in other words,
Well, they're the ones. Yeah, they're the fountain of money. I am not.
Okay, so you walk in the door as a busboy looking around for opportunity to do more to help the employer out and make money versus just doing what he's told you to do or she's told you to do.
Yeah, and there can be so many ways. I mean, it could be as simple as, well, what do they need? Well, they want waiters. Okay, what do they want in a waiter? I look around. The ones who are good have a lot of personality, know how to work a customer. Okay, they know how to sell. Okay, they need people who can upsell. They need people who are good at this, good at this, good at that, good at that.
Okay, but what if you're not good at any of those things? What if you're not good at selling and so on? Because I've got some other ideas, by the way. Let's say you're not good at those things.
Okay, so you're not
an introvert.
Good.
You're an introvert.
You are not good at anything that your business wants. Is that what you're saying?
No, what I'm saying is you're
at
the
bottom.
You're
just not good at those skills.
Yeah, you're at the bottom rung. You're a good worker. You know how to work. You know how to put in the full day. But you're not great with people. You're not going to be that sales guy because you just don't have that type of a pizzazz and personality and so on.
Then do something where your skills are... Yeah. Desired.
For example.
Okay, maybe you're good at data. Maybe you're good at... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Maybe.
Maybe you're good at physical labor.
Thank you.
Maybe you're good at fixing cars, or maybe you could become good at fixing cars.
I'm still in the restaurant here, by the way.
Okay.
I haven't left the restaurant yet.
All right.
So what I'm looking at is I'm the busboy, and I'm coming. I'm trying to figure out how do I improve myself. And so I'm looking around and thinking to myself, wow, you know what? This place, yeah, we bust the tables. It's fairly clean by the time the shift's over. But you know what? I look around, and man, I know the boss is paying somebody to come in and clean the inside of these windows on a weekly basis. Why is he paying somebody when, man, I'd be more than willing to do that for him. I mean, you get where I'm going with this?
You are assessing what the boss needs.
Right. And he's also maybe paying someone else to do.
He's paying a cleaning company to come in at night and clean.
Yeah, why
and
can't I do that?
And you're looking at this saying, you know, I could do that. What are you paying them?
Right.
What do you pay the cleaning company?
Tell you, I'll do it for half of that.
Well, you won't have to. Okay. I mean...
You see where I'm going with this,
Yeah,
though?
You don't have to go that low, but you look at them and say, what are you paying for the cleaning company?
Right.
I will take more pride in it.
Right.
Because I actually care about this place.
Correct.
And I'll do a hell of a job.
Right.
Okay, what are you paying them? All right. Yeah, look at things
that
they...
Go down the list. A lot of these restaurants will have... You know, little signage things that are around the restaurant. They're paying somebody to come in and stencil the windows. And, you know, maybe when I was in college, I knew some folks that did some of those things on the side. Maybe I'm an art major myself.
Let me give you another example.
Get where I'm going?
Yeah. Oh, totally. Let me give you another example. One thing that really happened with a number of businesses, and you were calling for it, is during COVID, they had to deliver a lot of food, and they were, of course, signing up for it. Now, there's an advantage to, you know, the DoorDash and these things.
Well, it's expensive, though.
Yeah, but it's very expensive. What if you're there and you say, hey, don't cut my hours. How about I deliver your food and you don't have to pay nearly as much to those companies? And I'll do it for less. And by the way, I like it here. I'm dedicated to your restaurant, and I'm going to get your food out to your people. Okay. Now, and what if I even help you come up with a way to contact all your people? All right. Look, you've got a product. You need to get it out there. So we got to contact people, remind them, hey, man, we can get the food to you. Here it is. Here's the menu. So we get your menus out to them, and I help deliver it.
Andy, we just came up with two or three different ways for a person that's at the bottom rung. Because the texter, by the way, said, remember his or hers comment was, well, these people don't have the ability to help themselves up. Wrong.
We just gave you
Wrong.
The ability.
I just gave you three examples of where you could help yourself out if you're at the bottom rung.
But
this isn't hard, folks.
But notice that he says they don't have the ability. He is taking on the mindset that the left wants him to have. They want people to be needy, not needed.
Yeah.
If you are needed, then you get that thing you were talking about earlier, purpose. The more, and by the way, folks, this is exact math. The more you are needed in life, the higher feeling of purpose you have. The more you are needy in life, the lower sense of purpose you have.
Yep.
One political party, and I'm getting political for a moment.
No, you're fine.
One political party wants you as an individual to feel more purpose.
Yep.
The other desperately wants you to feel less purpose.
So that they feel more needed.
So you'll need them.
Right.
They help you in ways that make you need them.
Right. So that they will feel needed, they being the top of the left.
Well, they don't even care if they feel needed. They just want power.
Oh, yes, they do.
They want power.
Oh, but that's still a need.
Okay. Well, yeah, okay. Fair enough. Good. And we're just playing semantics.
You're
right. You're right.
What you're saying is correct. That you're taking some... We want you, the worker, the person over
to
here at the bottom
on
rung,
us.
To feel needed... Because I need you. I need you to work for me and get the job done. The other side's doing exactly what you said. They want that person to feel needy so the guy at top is needed.
Yeah, and by the way, let's throw politics away here. Let's look at bosses. A really good boss wants his employees to feel needed,
right,
not needy.
Right.
A really good boss wants his employees or her employees to be thinking, how can I make something better of myself? How can I do more, be more, achieve more for the business and for myself? Right. Absolutely. That's what a good boss wants. And you've seen bad bosses who, I'm going to use a little profanity here, don't give a damn
right.
about the self-worth right. of their employees.
So back to, can anybody on any rung move themselves up,
yes.
even if they're not the owner of said business?
Yes.
Yes, folks, you can. Yes. It's called tenacity. It's what I've said it so many times on air. You guys are probably tired of me hearing it. It comes down to one thing. You have to outwork the guy next to you. That's the only thing it takes to achieve to the next rung. Outwork the guy next to you or the gal next to you or whatever it happens to be. It's that simple.
You know, the big thing that I've noticed, John, is that the job has to come first. Okay? People say, no, my family comes first. No, you don't understand. Mm-hmm. The job pays for your family.
That's right.
Okay.
Yes, Andy, you're correct.
Imagine that you're in a desert really quick and you find one oasis bubbling up of water.
Okay.
What's the most important thing? I came with you. Am I the most important thing, or
no,
is that
I
water?
Am. Well, the water is, but I
neither
drink
one
it
of us.
I want to drink it first.
Well, of course you will.
I want to survive.
You suddenly become a very quick and skillful person.
Yeah.
Here's the thing: the water is more important than you and I are.
Right.
Okay, because that produces what we are. We
you've
die
gotta
without
preserve
that.
It.
Young people today. And not just young people, old people. This has gone through the entire society. No longer view the job as coming first. No.
Secondary.
My vacation comes first. My needs come first.
My
schedule.
Hobby.
This, my hobby, my mm-hmm. whatever. And it's like, you don't understand. You nurture the job. The job comes first. You come last. And that is the way it is. Why? Because that job is providing for your family. No, I am. No, the job is.
And actually, if you really want to get down to it, the customers of that job are.
They come first.
Right.
Well, that's the whole point.
Yeah,
now you're
right.
Now you're getting it. You already have it, of course, but you know what I mean.
The problem is so many people don't have that. And they actually, in some cases, because I've seen it, and so have you, and so has Charlie, sometimes you look at these individuals working at these places, you're the customer, and yet they betroth the fact that you're actually walked through the door. They hate the fact you're there and you're a customer.
You're an impediment.
Right.
And then you see the opposite. You see that waiter or waitress who sees you as valuable, not just because they'll get bigger tips, but they understand you're the one who makes it run, and they make your time there glorious.
Right. And you reward them for doing so.
Oh, absolutely.
So again, folks, please, 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 never, ever, ever, ever text me and tell me that people don't have the ability to raise themselves up out of whatever situation they're in. Because, by the way, I can go find you countless examples, not only in this country, but worldwide, by the way, even in some of the most desolate of countries where these individuals with enough tenacity can raise themselves up. And, by the way, most of the people that live in other countries that look at things that way want to come here. Why? Because they know the best opportunity for them to take what they do with their tenacity and achieve something is in America.
Yeah.
At least for now.
The only problem is the more we grow government here, the less.
Less opportunity there is.
Opportunity.
That's right.
Absolutely.
That's right. So, folks, please, again, I'm gonna remind you, don't ever text me and tell me that people can't lift themselves up. Because what that really tells me is you have no faith in people at all. In fact, I will go as far as saying this. You actually hate people when you say things like that. Because what you're really saying is, Andy, you're too stupid to get yourself off the bottom rung. I have to help you do it because you can't do it yourself.
Yeah, I don't believe in you.
Do I really sound like I'm in it for you, Andy, or am I in it for myself?
Yourself.
Thank you. That's what that person says when they say things like that.
Right.
Whether they realize it or not, that's what they're saying.
Agreed.
So, all right, we'll come right back. Affordable Interest Mortgage is next. Kurt Rogers, by the way, would love to help you get that leg up and that rung up. Sometimes you can do that just by doing some things differently with your mortgage or adding a rental property or whatever the case may be. Talk to Kurt today, 720-895-0500.
Take aim. Affordable Interest Mortgage has been offering the Asset Manager All-in-One Loan for over 11 years. We are experienced in helping homeowners pay thousands less in interest on their mortgage, own their home faster, all without spending one dime more. 720-895-0500. Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, where we have hundreds of clients that have been using this loans to build their equity faster, access emergency funds when necessary, and pay off their home in 8 to 13 years versus 25 to 30. People initially believe this loan is too good to be true, but it is true. Call 720-895-0500 now to see if you qualify. Loans from $100,000 to $2.5 million, same rate. Ask our previous clients. They will tell you it works. Call 720-895-0500 and work with the experts. This loan has been around since 1965. Affordable interest mortgage, where it's all about you. 720-895-0500. Regulated by DORA, NMLS 298191, Equal Credit Lender.
All right, Franktown Firearms folks, who is going to be open this weekend, because they always are. They've got a full range. They've got accessories, ammo, training, you name it. And you can actually become a member there, too, if you'd like. But don't forget, you can buy a gun while you're there, and it's about a day wait is all now to do so. KOZRadio.com, 720-770-7777.
Preserve your liberty, protect your family, and have fun at the same time. Everyone at Franktown Firearms has the same goal: to fire off some freedom seeds safely and confidently. That common goal builds relationships based on shared values and mutual respect, which makes Franktown Firearms one of the few places you can preserve your liberty, protect your family, and have fun at the same time. Because they maintain good relationships with suppliers, treat customers with respect, and offer lower tax rates, Franktown Firearms continues to sell guns and ammo at or below MSRP. But they don't only want you to buy a gun. They want to see you develop confidence through practice. Fill out the contact form now at klzradio.com/franktown for $50 off your initiation fee, plus your first month free. Range members, first responders, and military veterans receive discounts in the shop, as well as discounts on all classes. Franktown Firearms, where friends are made.
Extreme Auto Repair, folks, where, again, if you're looking to do something for Memorial Day weekend and you've still got some gear to get ready, you maybe your vehicle, your SUV, could be a boat, it could be whatever, you name it, Extreme can help you with that, including your trailers. Make sure that's done, but you're running out of time. Call them on Monday, 303-841-1071.
Go with your gut. You know when an estimate from a mechanic doesn't feel right? Maybe they're telling you to fix a bunch of stuff you didn't even know was broken. Maybe their prices seem surprisingly high. The team at Extreme Auto Repair in Parker will give you a second opinion for free, so you know what's reasonable and what's not. They can typically beat the prices of their competitors, but they won't hold it against you if you decide to go back to the first guy. Either way, you have the peace of mind. The team at Extreme Auto Repair wants to keep you safe and keep your vehicle on the road longer, but they never want to pressure you into repairs that you don't really need. So with every estimate, the team at Extreme Auto Repair will give you a priority list showing you all of your recommended maintenance items in order from the most to least important. That way, you decide what you want to take care of now and what can wait until later. Free second opinions at klzradio.com/extreme. Promises kept.
Hi, this is Al Smith with Golden Eagle Financial. Join me at a workshop at Ruth Chris Steakhouse Tuesday evening, the 25th of May. To register, go to klzradio.com/money.
It's time to leave your safe space. This is Rush to Reason on KLZ 560.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. John Rush and Andy Pate. And John, tomorrow morning shows, what are you going to be talking about?
So Fix-It Radio, Bill from Arc Electric, one of our great sponsors, is going to join us. We'll talk everything in regards to, you know, do you want to be self-sustained? He's got everything from generators to what you can do with wind and solar, you know, on an individual basis, not a, you know, worldwide basis.
Right.
But individually, if you live in an area of town where you want to make sure that you can do that, he'll explain all of that tomorrow. And then, of course, at 10 o'clock on Drive Radio, just car stuff.
Just car stuff.
Good car stuff. By the way, somebody texted in and said that last explanation of what we talked about when it came to what one side feels versus the other, that we were very spot on in our description. So
hey,
kudos. There we go. All right. Have a great weekend, Andy. Everybody else do the same. I will, again, be back first thing in the morning, 9 o'clock for Fix-It Radio. Otherwise, hour number one. Or no, are we doing hour? We're doing hour one, Charlie. Hour number two is the movies. Our 80s movies is next. Don't go anywhere, okay? Be right back. Drive, or sorry, not Drive Radio. That's tomorrow. This is Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560.